from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffy.
Hit it! Oh, what a one! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the border, with Jeff Snyder and Nick Dark.
Hang it up there!
Here we are, Cleats and Cufflinks. Another day, another episode. Jeffrey.
I'm fixing my spit guard.
Is that what you're doing over there?
Yeah.
It's not a spit guard.
I thought it was called a spit
guard.
No, it's
a spit pop. Yeah, it's a popper. It keeps the popping sounds down when you say potato.
Potato.
Or pop pie.
Pop pie. Okay, so they won't hear the p.
Not as much.
Okay.
Not as much. That's the goal anyway.
That's good.
Yeah. You just got back from a nice trip to the Pacific Northwest.
I did. I left Philadelphia at 24 degrees, got to Chicago at 16 degrees.
Yep.
Where they gave a warning for getting off the jetway, and then got to Portland at 24 degrees. What happened?
That's not usual.
Yeah, coldest few days in Portland, which meant that I got to enjoy them, but a very good time. I got to meet with Addison Magnus, the new GM.
New GM for the Portland Stags.
I got to see their new stadium in Hillsboro.
So excited about the stadium.
I know. It's best way I could describe it is PPL Park cut in half. So it had club boxes, concessions, the locker rooms were brilliant. Everything was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be serving food. They're going to be serving beer.
Food, beer, the whole nine yards.
My goodness.
And big parking, everything. Everything you could have wanted in a stadium. And they couldn't have been more excited to have the Stags, which was, I was impressed.
Love it.
And also got to meet with the players, got to take them out for beers. My favorite story is I went to some happy hour bar with Norden, Eli Friedman, Dan Supnik. And of course, Nathan and Will, my favorite two guys.
Nathan and Will. Yeah, let's bring up that point. Obviously, Addison taking over the GM ship of the Portland Stags. Nathan is not going anywhere.
No, he just wanted to be more higher level, right, and not run the more day-to-day operations. So, and he's earned that.
Oh, so certainly, well. Yeah.
So, they're still extremely involved, but more from a high level as, I think they like to be the big dog.
Yeah, so I don't blame them. They're going to be sitting in those nice box seats that the new stadium has.
They will. they are nice. It was a pretty cool thing. So, I bought everybody beers as I do.
You're very generous that way
with the beers.
Yeah, with the beers.
And then I got the bill for $15.
That is not a lot.
That's not a lot of money.
Not a lot of money. This is why Portland is the place that young people go to retire.
Yeah, I don't. It's where we should go.
Yeah. When are we moving?
Now, because I bought way too many beers for $15. Then I went to them and said, like, what's up? And they said it's $1 beer night. But remember, I got a chocolate stout that would be here like $7, right, or $8.
Yeah.
So it was just dollar beer anything. It wasn't dollar beer draft or anything.
It wasn't like Miller Lite
or domestic beer night. Yeah. It was dollar beer, dollar beer. Yeah. Dollar bill, dollar beer.
Dollar bill for
whatever I'm
beer.
Saying. Anything. So it was, Portland's better. I'll say it right now.
All right. So I'll start researching real estate stuff out there.
Yeah.
Commercial.
You can get something for like a dollar. And how about you? While I was gone, you've been doing this this Speaking Ultimate thing.
Yeah, we started a new little series, Speaking Ultimate, working with Greg Fallon here in the office, putting together some insight into ultimate terminology. I feel like we have, as every sport does, a lot of funny terms for things. And it was, for new people coming into the game, new fans, important to help explain a little bit about what we're talking about.
Now, what terms have you done so far?
So far we did bookends.
Mm-hmm.
We did Callahan.
Callahan.
We did Callahan. We did poach.
Poach.
Yeah, we did poach, and I'm shooting another one today on Force, the Force.
Right, yeah. Not the Star Wars.
Not the Star Wars Force. The Frisbee Force, yeah.
People gave you a little controversy on the Callahan part, am I right?
Yeah.
They said that, I don't know what they said.
Yeah, I mean, there's some debate about the exact reason that it was named after Henry Callahan, whether he had introduced the rule or whether it was just kind of called that in homage as they, instituted the Callahan rules. It's you know, it's a little bit of a confusing history. I think I don't think we said anything wrong in the story we told. I think we may have just omitted some detail that people felt we should have attended to.
Well, I guess we'll agree that Callahan had a lot to do with the naming of his role.
It's named after him.
And then also terribly tragic.
Oh, yeah.
His death.
Just awful. I mean, literally, this is a guy who is waiting tables at a Bennigan's in Boulder, Colorado. He's the head waiter. And they get robbed. And he does what you're supposed to do, from all reports, which is give the person the money, as they're holding a gun. So he gives the person the money, and the guy takes all the money, and then for some reason turns around and shoots him. And nobody knows why. They did catch the guy. He's still in prison to this day. But just a really sad story. Young guy, you know, cut down very pretty sad. Early.
Sad. Very sad, but I guess I'm pretty glad that guy's still in prison. So hopefully he stays there for a long time.
I hope so as well. But yeah, I think it's a nice thing that, you know, to see the legacy of that kind of guy carried over. Even just, I mean, obviously the MVP award for college players is named after him. Mm-hmm. But also just to have something so integral to the game as a you know, a term defining a specific situation is kind of cool to see his name live on that way.
Definitely cool. Definitely well-deserved. And all right, moving on to happier things, I guess.
Yeah, so happier things, a little uplifting. Earliest ever, we're looking to, within the next week or so, get season tickets up for sale for all the teams.
Now, there's questions that hit right away.
Oh,
number
yeah.
one, is the schedule going to be out?
No. you know, we have a working schedule, and I think we'll be able to give an idea of the sort of range of the season from, you know, mid-April to...
Yeah, we do. We have a range.
July. We have the range. We're going to hold off on releasing the detailed schedule because we know that there's going to be slight changes based on stadium availabilities as we are just now starting to book those up.
Right. So we're going to sell season tickets if anyone purchases season tickets, and then when the confirmed schedule comes out, they have issues, we're going to refund whatever you want, work with you in any way you want.
Yeah, we're going to help out. And I think this first round of season ticket sale is going to be a great deal. And it's going to be for people who just know. They know they're going.
200% off, right? Isn't that what we're doing?
Yeah, that minimum. Yeah, we're actually paying you to buy tickets this year. Is that what we're doing?
Can't go wrong.
we're not going to lose on this. Oh, man, I hope none of our investors listen to this.
No, they don't. That's all who listens to this.
That's the only people listening right now. Yeah, we're going to get some calls. So I'm excited to get those out early this year. And I feel like we have a good opportunity to sell a lot of season tickets, get a lot of people in the stands who are diehard fans of these teams and see them on their road.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So I'm excited about that too. Nice job. I'm going to give you a compliment.
Mm.
Nice job on doing not that much work, but getting other people to finish all the work that you should have done to get these up.
Thank you. That's right. As close to a compliment as you've ever given me.
All right, let's get into our first segment.
Segment one.
We have all sorts of stuff piled up for us.
Segment one is going to be, I feel like, a regular segment on this show for the next 12 months or so, which is our new sponsor segment. We're going to talk about the new sponsors that come on board. We've been so happy with the work that our sales team has done. And, you know, I think we're going to have new sponsors to introduce each time we record, judging from the pipeline those guys have put together. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to talk about four different deals. First of all, new signing with Innova.
Mm-hmm.
Re-upping.
Yes.
So, the first deal we had with Innova was a two-year deal. A great deal in that they helped us redesign the Innova Pulsar to fit the pro game.
And we helped them, too. Like it was all together.
Yeah, right? Together. We worked together to design a disc that would be able to take its place in Ultimate.
That's also why I'm wearing this hat today.
You are. Got the Innova hat on today.
They gave this to me.
I know.
Did you get a hat?
I did not get a hat.
That's an example, maybe, of something, but I wouldn't read into
it. I got some discs.
Okay.
For the disc golfing.
Who doesn't?
so it was a two-year deal, you know, and at that point, though, it was still, even though they had committed to redesign the Pulsar, they had worked us into their retail program packaging, they still, the deal itself was still kind of a dip your toe in and test the waters kind of deal. The three-year deal that we just signed with them is a reflection of their long-term commitment to both the MLU and to the sport of Ultimate, and we could not be happier
this
to have
cannonball.
Support that out. It's a cannonball into the pool. It's not a toe. Yeah. It's a cannonball. It's heavy artillery.
Yeah, I want to thank David Shope,
yep.
Zeb Campbell, and Harold Duvall. Fantastic three guys. I will say that we do have a special package on your way.
We got something being sent to them if they're hearing this. Yeah,
you earned.
They definitely earned it.
There's a lot of inside jokes there, but don't ever drink a straw beer-rita.
Don't drink an F beer.
Yeah.
That's what they're rated.
So we went to a bar with them.
With them.
And they had...
Where were we? Rock Hill, North Carolina.
And the bar had all their beers and they had grades to them. So A was, you know, a phenomenal beer and F was a terrible beer.
Yeah, sort of like A is my grade most of the time and F would be reflecting sort of your performance.
See, here's what I don't like. You're not good at this.
I know. Okay? I'm terrible at the insults.
You're a failure at insults.
It doesn't
insults.
Work that well, yeah.
See how
yeah.
he puts it on you? I'm yeah. phenomenal at insults.
You're an A at insults.
So we played a game of darts.
Yeah.
And I have to admit that we don't lose in darts together a lot.
No.
But they beat us, and then they had to buy us – we had to buy them an F beer, right?
Or yeah, it was a trade-off. Whoever lost had to buy a round of – F-rated beers for the other team.
Right. So they beat us the first round and got us Budweiser.
Yep.
Then we beat them the second round and got them Budweiser, something like that.
And then they won and they got...
Strawberritas.
Strawberritas.
Which tasted like cough syrup with a hint of cough syrup.
The funny part was the first sip you took...
One bad.
You were like, oh, this is nice. The second sip, you had the reaction that I had immediately.
It was like allergic.
Oh.
So anyway.
So we're not getting sponsored by them anytime soon.
No. And you know, no offense, Strawberrita, but we're just not your
don't
demographic.
Want it. Wrong demographic.
Yeah, you could give us all the things.
Just cases of it. Yeah. I could picture this happening.
But if you want a good prank to play on somebody, Strawberrita.
Yeah. Yeah, get them a Strawberrita.
I'm fine with that.
And I would like to hear if anybody out there actually likes this product.
Nope.
I would love to know what kind of difficulties you've had in your life leading up to now that have so ruined your ability to enjoy the world.
The other thing you should do is tell, because Nick, you are a beer connoisseur.
Yeah, you would, yeah.
Beer would drinkers out there, you should, I would like to know what's your best F beer.
Oh, that's a good question.
And your best A beer.
Best so, F beer, best A beer. So yeah, what is your best lowest rated beer?
Right.
And also then your favorite beer. Let's see what your scale is.
And you can tweet it at Nick Darling.
Yeah, at Nick Darling. Send it out.
I like that. Okay. So, awesome deal with Innova. Couldn't be more excited. 3 years kind of really puts that to bed. Like, all we got to do now is do lots of work, and that's exciting. Plus, there's more distribution and all sorts of stuff, and they're motivated to have a lot of kids and people using the Pulsar.
That's the cool. thing I like the most. This deal does have a lot in it that speaks to youth development and to growing the game. And, I you know, they've done such a good job with that on the disc golf side. They've been so committed to that for years and have done amazing things with that game. The fact that they're shifting a good amount of their attention over to Ultimate is going to be a big help in our efforts to develop the youth programs.
Yeah. So, you know how people held on to the whammo when the Discraft came along? Now you got a new story. I guess we'll see.
We'll see
how the Pulsar fares up. We'll but it's, they're certainly putting forth the effort. We're certainly 100% behind them. So I'm excited to see the landscape of what disc is used over the next months and years.
It's going to be fun to watch.
Yep. All right, what's the next one?
So the next one... is Nike Ultimate Camps.
Hmm.
So we just signed a deal with Nike Ultimate Camps, and you are actually more involved in this than I was. Maybe you can enlighten.
And Billy Sickles,
of course.
He got the contacts there, but we worked with Sierra Levinson there. And a very enjoyable conversation. They're so confident in what they do and the camps they run. We're going to be running camps in Philadelphia, Boston, and Portland this year at a minimum. They basically are just pros at making camps work and making it really simple for people who run them to just do what they do best, which is teach.
Yeah, and they have all the logistics down, all the procedures for running the camp down, all the legal stuff, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So all what we're providing is the ultimate expertise in the players.
Yeah, and I think it helps us streamline stuff. It has the great Nike brand behind it. It's just great stuff. I mean, we're... You know, I feel that we've gotten pretty darn good at how to run a camp. And Ultimate Frisbee is unfortunately Let's talk here. Let's go on. Do we have time? What time is it? I'm gonna take up time. We might not get to
some time. We might not get to all the things.
This is a good little talk for us to have because soccer is the worst sport in the world. We all agree on that. Now,
I don't think I don't know. I don't know that that's all of us. There's half of this table that definitely feels adamantly this way.
Again, yeah. And if we look at the
except that he gets excited
half.
Now about watching soccer and
no, I don't.
Playing FIFA.
I love the Hotspurs, though.
You do love the Hotspurs,
but hopefully they should never trade that. What's that guy's name?
Oh, I don't know.
He was good.
I don't know who you're going for.
Gareth Bale.
Oh, Gareth Bale.
Gareth Bale.
Yeah, that was a
Gale for sure. That's what they call him.
They got a lot of money for him, but
yeah. It's the easiest sport to teach for kids. It's so easy to let them play. You put a bunch of kids out. You say, hey, kick the ball. If it goes in the net, one of you scores, right?
Yeah.
And while you kids can be terrible at it, not a big deal because the game can flow. Basketball, like, it's tough. So you have to be able to dribble down the court, right? So you have to make different rules. Baseball is impossible. We have to play T-ball, and you have to do other things to facilitate playing a baseball game. Football, actually, in some ways, easier because they dumb it down so much, and actually tackling is kind of, you know.
But you're not even playing real football at that point, right? Like football, I've watched football for a long time. I could not walk out on the field and play a single point of football.
Well, yeah,
there's so many rules.
There's an intelligence level you need.
That is not the reason.
Okay. But my point there is very difficult to have a game flow. But not even, football actually isn't that hard to have game flow because you make, break it down very simple. Ultimate Frisbee, the disc can't touch the ground, and it makes it tough, right?
Like,
for a player to complete another pass to another player is not easy. And to throw it flat and far, all those things is actually really, really tough. So one of the things we've been talking with Innov about, like, how do you make the best possible disc for youth? And what rules do you tweak so that youth have an easier time, you know, playing the game? Because if you have aggressive marks on 8-year-olds, they're never going to complete a pass. They just don't.
Right.
It's too hard. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. So where I was going from here is ultimate, while a very simple sport, right? It's just pass and catch, tough to teach. And so we really want to work on the curriculum of how to teach ultimate and all of the basics because you have to learn how to throw to play the game. You have to have throwers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a, like you said, the reason the game is so great for kids is it's simple. You know, throw the disc down the field, catch it in the end zone, you score. There's not a lot of rules, not a lot of confusing points. The challenge, though, is the skill set you need to just basically play is challenging. The throw and catch type of thing. And it's interesting to see are there ways we can adjust the game set, the rule set of the game, to accommodate even younger kids, 6, 7, 8-year-olds, in ways that don't frustrate them and turn them off from the game quickly.
And one of the ways Big Tom, who's sitting here with us, talked about his days coaching basketball, you play with the kids, right?
Yep.
That way you have someone who can handle the ball. Ian McClellan and I were out helping a team, and we played. So what we did was, you're just the reset. That way you have someone who can throw, or maybe throw, in my case.
I remember that day when you showed up limping the next day, I think, right?
Yeah, as kids. What are they? So you have someone who can, you know, you're playing, Ian and I play against each other, we automatically allow a reset to each other, and we catch and distribute. And that way the kids are starting to see, you know, you get to talk to about game flow, and they understand that here's a throw, but they have to go, you know, practice that stuff. So that's one thing we add in is like a facilitator, right? So because otherwise the game is just too hard.
Yeah, and wouldn't you say that often, and I feel like I also have this problem even when I was coaching soccer, often it's the tendency of a coach who is a player to introduce concepts that are far too complicated for a situation. I feel like I see that all the time.
I mean, I just saw it, and I see it all the time. I show up to practices, and kids are running drills that are expert drills that are way too hard. And my suggestion to people running clinics and or training teams is you have to start with the basics. You have to be able to throw and catch. So forget the deep cutting and flow drills and all these other things that are irrelevant if no one can throw to them. So you're running a drill where your kids make a little in cut, turn, and throw the disc deep, but none of them can throw deep. Let's rewind that, or let's change that to basketball. You're running a drill where instead of doing a layup drill, which is something you have to be able to do, I would make that akin to a dump drill. You're doing a three-point drill, and none of the kids can get the ball.
They can't even
basket,
get the ball to the hoop.
To the hoop. Yeah. So what's the point? You have to teach them the basics, and that's something I think we're pretty good at now. Like we realize, like you have to. It's frustrating because a coach, right? You want them to be good, but unfortunately, the pathway to being good is, or to doing that drill is 100 practices away, and you need to realize that.
Yeah, and for us, you know, we're doing clinics, we're doing camps, we're introducing the game to a lot of people. It's got to be fun. You can't make it so frustrating that people don't want to come back.
Yeah, I mean, imagine playing T-ball. I mean, I remember I loved baseball when I was a kid. Imagine being pitched to at the young age. Like, there's always going to be the one kid who hits the ball every time.
Yep.
Because they're a fantastic young athlete. Then there's the other kids who just don't come close, and everyone's sitting there bored. So what they did is they put the ball on the tee. Now you have more play. It's still hard.
I umped T-ball, and I saw a lot of kids strike out.
Yeah. I mean, it's still hard, right? It's still hard. Think about it. You're swinging a stick at a ball.
Yeah.
And you have to have good hand-eye coordination, which some people don't get until they're – how old am I?
I don't know. All I'm saying is in the games that I coached, the tee had a great ERA.
It's a good tee. The expert tee. So finish that up.
Got a little off topic, but
I love getting off topic. Nike Ultimate Camp is very exciting.
It's going to be great.
If we can hit this one right and do this, we'll be running. You know, they only ran 10 camps last year, nine camps. So what I want to see is, you know, I have big lofty goals, but we should be running 50, 60 camps in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
3 or 4 years.
I agree.
Should just be monstrous amount of camps and huge camps.
Kids love to play this game. Let's get it out to them.
Yeah, I mean, a friend of mine sent his kid to baseball camp. This kid is now a prospect for AAA.
Really?
Yeah, he's 18 years old, 6'5", 235.
Okay.
92-mile-an-hour fastball.
Oh, my
and,
goodness.
And strokes the ball like a pro. And you know what? You know what's lucky about this kid? And you're going to hate him because he has it so good. One of his teachers was Cole Hamels. Cole Hamels would come teach him.
That'll help.
So Cole doesn't know much about pitching.
No, not a lot.
And even less about hitting, but it helped him. So, yeah. So, I mean, this kid is – so, anyway, my point there was they would send him to baseball camp. Take a guess how much it was for 1 week of baseball camp.
Oh. I mean, I can't even imagine.
$4,000.
No.
$4,000.
No.
So these Nike Ultimate camps are – sometimes between, if they're day camps, they could be $300-$400. If they're overnight camps, they could be up like $1,500.
So, wow.
But just still think about it. Like the things parents are willing to pay, number one, it's nice. A week, you know, your kids get to go spend a week and do a lot of stuff. Parents get their week break, get to do some fun stuff.
I could use one of those.
I know. I agree. So that's why we're working so hard for this.
Yeah, we got to work really hard.
But, you know, these...
Do our kids get to go for free?
Yeah, they do. They
okay,
do.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah.
Of course, we have to run the camp, so that means you're just with your kid. But, you know, it's not that expensive. So we have a good opportunity because, again, Ultimate Frisbee is nothing like baseball where there's so
equipment
much...
Equipment costs are so low.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome.
All right, next.
So next, one of my favorite sponsors we've ever gotten.
Mm-hmm. Billy Sickles again, right?
Billy, showing up. Very excited about this sponsor. Peanut butter sponsor. Mm-hmm. Taking over the spreads category.
Spreads.
You know, sponsorship is divided into categories.
Yes.
They wanted spreads. So you won't be seeing a hummus.
No,
you won't
spreads.
Be seeing a fluffer nutter. You know, we have a peanut butter sponsor.
Nutter butters?
So Skippy. Skippy yes. Peanut butter. Stepping up into the ultimate game.
This was cool because this is the first ever sponsorship that we signed that absolutely has nothing to do with Ultimate Frisbee. Shows the work and the reach of our brand and what we've been able to do. A massive brand like Skippy, that's just enormous. And they liked us because of all the hard work that our teams have put in. And when I say our teams, I mean not just our, you know, like the Stags and the Rumble. I mean the content teams, the graphic teams, all the stuff they've put in to make our brand look so good. And now we have Skippy on board. And the best part is that they also have confirmed that Creamy is the peanut butter of choice, which I agreed with completely, and we're just going to run forward
with
that.
Absolutely untrue.
That is so.
There is no honest American that prefers Creamy over Crunchy.
So
it's just a simple fact.
I don't know how we disagree on things all the time.
This is one, though, that there's no compromise here.
Chunky is unfinished, right?
Chunky is rustic.
No.
It's manly.
It's not manly.
It is. It's like having a beard, which you also fail at.
Right. No, so you're right. It is No Shave November. I shaved 2 days ago. No, see, this is your problem. Like, you need a manly peanut butter to make up for your lack of manliness.
I need a peanut butter in which I can see myself. I need to be able to look at a peanut butter and say, that is a peanut butter with grit, determination, a peanut butter.
And nuts in it.
That is a little nuts.
Oh, there's so many.
I actually chunky peanut butter so much that I would literally, if you just gave me a crushed up can, that's what I would spread on there. Look. So Skippy, if I could get a chunkier peanut butter.
Yeah, let's do a survey to see that.
We're going
to
do a survey.
And here's what I know, because this is what annoys me. Chunky peanut butterists, a chunkist, they're more vocal. Your creamy people are confident in their creaminess. They don't feel the need to tell everyone about how great the cream. So you're going to win the.
Yeah, your creamy people are lazy.
They're not
they
lazy.
They don't want to chew extra. They want it all ground up. They're the same people that.
Do you eat crabs with a shell on?
Doesn't everybody?
A crunchy crab?
I go right through the crab.
Man, I've been eating crabs wrong. No, look, we'll find out. Let's just do.
We're going to find out.
What's the hashtag?
We'll create a survey that also includes some other questions so we can get a. So we can gauge the attributes of a creamy eater versus a chunky eater.
Why don't we just do hashtag chunky Skippy or hashtag creamy Skippy? And we'll see which...
You want to do a Twitter kind of...
Yeah, a little like, thing.
Okay, we'll start with... I still want to do the Facebook survey. We're going to do some things.
We'll do some service, we'll do some but I just for us.
All right, so for us, for the cleats and cufflinks... Mm-hmm.
Creamy Skippy.
Yeah. Give us a creamy... Skippy, is it crunchy or chunky? We should know this.
Chunky?
Brand-wise.
See, you don't even know.
Oh, man.
What is it, Tom?
It's chunky. It's chunky.
What did I say?
I don't know.
Crunch bar?
Crunch bar.
Okay.
Crunch bar, crunch.
Chunky anyway, very bar. Excited to have Skippy. I think that we do our job as we know we're going to do because they're toe-dipping with us.
Yeah. Yeah, this is their first in. So.
They're going to be – I already know. It sounds, maybe – too bold, but they're going to be really happy with us. We do a good job with activation, and I'm looking forward to talking to them next year.
I mean, I'm so confident in this. My wife has made the complete changeover. We're a Skippy household.
Yeah,
full on Skippy.
You just reminded me that I got to meet Timmy Pearson for the first time when I was in Portland, and so I just I had to bring that up.
Yeah,
if you get a chance to meet Timmy Pearson, go meet him.
That's what nutty peanut butter will remind you.
No, creamy. He's smooth.
Oh,
he's smooth.
No.
So move on from it because remember, hashtag creamy chunk. No, creamy Skippy.
Creamy Skippy, hashtag crunchy Skippy.
Crunchy.
Chunky.
Chunky.
Damn
See,
it.
You don't even know. Chunky. Chunky Skippy.
Chunky Skippy.
Chunky Skippy. All right. Now, last deal.
So the last deal, some of you may have noticed this past weekend that we had a little bit of fun with our...
A little bit of fun.
We had a lot of fun with our MOU shop.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of you were following along, we know from Twitter and from Facebook. Some of you believed our ruse that we had been hacked and offered help to us, which was very nice.
And I'm going to hook you guys up, too. I have a few people on Twitter. I am going to hook up with some cool discounts and gear because you truthfully came to the rescue and wanted to help us out, and I appreciate that so much. We have such cool fans.
Yeah.
Like, they came and were like, here, do this, shut the server off. And, Tom and I were doing it, right? We're like sitting there watching the Twitter feed, and I'm like, they're so helpful. And one guy was like, turn the server off, for God's sakes, and it made me laugh. I'm like, oh man, it's a hoax. So we just wrote to him, like, it's a hoax.
I liked the comment where someone said, this has got to be a disgruntled employee. And I said, nope, it's actually like four or five disgruntled employees.
It's all just gruntled employees.
Two of them
actually
started the thing.
So, boy, it certainly worked for getting the buzz out. It didn't stop, did it?
Yeah, I got the buzz out. And so basically, here's what happened. Here's the sort of timeline of it. A couple months ago, we signed a fantastic deal with this store. Mm-hmm. This store, as most of you probably already know, is a large online retailer. A growing online retailer. They've been making huge strides in delivering ultimate gear, disc golf gear, freestyle gear out into the world, and we signed a big deal with them where they're going to take over our online store, manage all the customer service and fulfillment, help us develop new products, do all the things that we've been doing in the house for the last couple of years, and sort of take some of that burden off of us. So we signed that deal a couple months ago, and as the date approached for us to make this changeover, we were we've been selling out all of our excess stock of what we had left, and our store was starting to look a little bit sparse. And we're like, what are we going to do to commemorate this switch? And I'll credit you with the idea of, let's destroy our own store.
I did like that idea.
And so we sat down with the content team, developed a strategy for literally sabotaging ourselves in the name of transition. And it's funny, I have a good friend of mine who works for a very large company in e-commerce. They, hundreds of millions of dollars they do in business. And I was telling him what we were doing, and he was loving every minute of it. And he watched all weekend long. He's like, this is the greatest store transition. Ridiculous.
We actually have to post screenshots. So, I got a lot of emails and communication from people who were just like, such a fun idea. Like, it's so silly. Of course, I also got email from Dan Vogel, who was like, what are you doing with e-commerce? He's an e-commerce man and all that stuff. So
yeah.
He hated part of it. But I think everybody saw that we had a lot of good fun with it. We really should post the screenshots of what we did. I mean, it was Markham Schaffner's rocket arm, and his arm was a rocket. It was, you could buy.
I like Matt Esser's workout video.
Workout video. You could buy Alan Cole's hair.
Yep.
You could buy, who was the other one? It was the top left. It was Tridiak's hammer, and he was actually
throwing a hammer.
It was good stuff.
I think it was the thing about it is you actually suggested the idea, like, let's destroy our store. It'll be a fun thing to do. You originally suggested it, but then you got a little bit of cold feet a little bit. You didn't want us to be too silly or too funny, right? We had this conversation.
I just thought you're dealing with a lot of people, you need to be really direct in what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or else it's confusing.
And I think you were right. And I think we found a good line between that. But at the same time, we're serious often, I think. Because our brand is a very serious thing. It's our business. It's what we care about. It's the livelihood of a lot of people now. And it's very important that we're careful with it. We're still going to take, from time to time, a moment to poke fun at ourselves, to have fun. And I think... I think as a staff and as a company, we earn the right to do that now and then, and to take some risks as well.
So your team did a good job. I mean, a darn good job. It couldn't have been better. It was just great. We should put together a montage, like a review.
Yeah,
people should see it. It was hilarious.
It was. We will do that. We'll assemble a little bit of a review of that and get some stuff out. We'll put Tom on that and get some stuff up on social media, because it was a lot of fun. And now here we are. This store is launched.
2-year deal with them.
Yep. Right now, the product line is somewhat limited, as we knew it would be when we started. But you'll see that it will be building up over the coming weeks and months as we lead into the season. And we'll actually have developed a deeper, more diverse product offering.
So this deal does not constitute toe dipping. This is, again, I credit Distore for coming in kind of full force.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed the times with Chris and Andy. We've worked with them. Great guys. When I first talked with them, I said, what's your key? Like, why should we go with you? And they said, our customer service is tops. And that is that everyone says the same thing. It resonates with every person I've talked with. They said their customer service is phenomenal. Also, the way they track their metrics and the way they make their choices is phenomenal. So the reason you have less, or you see less in the shop now, is we put up basics, and we're going to continuously roll out more and more products, and we're going to measure them smartly and, for their success. That way we have the designs that are getting the most sales. We're working on making the shop even more and more successful. And the good news for our fans out there is, we ran, I think, a pretty good shop. We did a good job, but that's not our core competency.
Right.
Theirs is, and we rarely did lost leaders to generate sales, right? It just wasn't really our thing and how we did it. You should follow Distore
on
Twitter. You should get on their list and everything. You can buy stuff at greatly discounted prices when they're doing their big sales. So they're something to watch. You can sign up for a monthly disc, or like every month they send you something new.
That's a
greatly discounted stuff. I mean, if you want to get ultimate gear, they're the place to go.
Yeah, and keep an eye this weekend. Black Friday sales on MLU gear. And we'll also have some stuff going on Cyber Monday.
Yeah, you get free mini disc right now.
Free mini disc on Friday, I think. And then,
no, right now, the whole time.
Oh, right now,
I'm pretty sure you can get the
free mini discs. Get in there. So a lot of good stuff. Head on over, check out the new shop. check out the other stuff they have to offer. They're a great company. We could not be happier about this.
Yeah, and more and more stuff is going to keep rolling out, so you guys will have fun.
Yeah.
Is that all of them?
Well, for now. For now. We'll save our next round for next week, and we'll do some more sponsor shout-outs, show you a little bit of the types of deals we're putting together. And as I said, it's going to be a regular segment. We got a lot of stuff coming in.
Kudos to Jonathan, Billy, and Bert, the team up there, for rocking it. More sponsorships have closed in the last 45 days than they have in the previous 700.
True. So, true.
Phenomenal. True. And it's clicking. And we know the deals that are out right now that are just as good as this.
Oh, phenomenal deals.
Exciting.
So excited.
We'll have them in the next week or two, and we get to talk about them.
I love it. Oh, last note on Distor. They're going to be on the front of the Philadelphia Spinners jersey.
Oh, that's right.
Forgot to mention that. So congratulations to Philadelphia Spinners, getting yourself a jersey sponsor.
Innova is on every jersey.
Yeah, Innova will be a small marking on every jersey throughout the league, which is cool. And then, yeah, Distor is going to be taking the front of that Philadelphia Spinners jersey.
And as a hint, we may have something to talk about with jerseys in the next week or two.
Yeah, you never know.
So we'll just leave that there.
Yeah, we'll leave that. Let that hang out there. You love hints.
I love hints. Oh, God. I'm all about hints. By the way, I got something for you later. Let's go on.
Let's move on. So how are we doing on time, Greg? We doing all right here? Excellent. Greg doesn't know.
Greg just shrugs.
He just shrugs.
He just woke up.
He's like, huh?
He shrugged. Okay.
Yeah. I'd say we're doing good. Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about a segment that I'm titling Cutting the Best Player.
Is this the Coach's Corner thing you're doing?
We could call it a Coach's Corner thing. Okay. I bring it up because I have, due to my wife's obsession with the football, I've been watching actually a lot of NFL football. And I've noted a couple circumstances that I thought were interesting. Because we talk a lot about players and about what makes a player a good player for a team. What combination of on the field and off the field abilities make them the right choice for a team. We talk about this a lot with our league. So I'm seeing this manifest in the NFL a little bit. We see the DeSean Jackson incident in Philadelphia, Percy Harvin in Seattle, where they let him go. Great receiver, but citing locker room problems. And then also, again, Seattle, rumors are they're going to look to offload Marshawn Lynch at the end of the season, mm-hmm. who is physically an astonishing athlete, but apparently an occasionally difficult human being.
So where are you going with this?
Well, what I want to know is, as a coach, when you're looking at evaluating players, either that you already have or that you're looking to sign again, what are the criteria off the field, and how does that balance their on-the-field ability? If they're an astonishing on-the-field player, how much leeway does that give them in other areas? And does that differ with where we are compared to where the NFL is?
Well, first, this all comes down to the coach. The best coaches in the world can take the best players in the world with the best potential and get the most out of them. As an example, you know, my idol for coaching is Bill Belichick. And when I was coaching, I would basically read everything I could about him because I liked his philosophy and how he thought about the game and planned for it and executed it. But take him, for example, Randy Moss comes into the NFL troubled, right? People were worried about, I think he had marijuana use or something. So they were worried about him and his work ethic. Team to team, like he had success in Minnesota, but then they struggled here and there. He goes to New England at the end of his career when Tom Brady throws, 50 touchdown passes, right? Most of them to Randy Moss at the twilight of his career. But it's like Bill Belichick takes Randy Moss and makes him unbelievable where other teams struggled. Bill Belichick drafts Tom Brady in the sixth round and makes him to the Hall of Fame quarterback who is, you know, there's not many people who you're going to say are better than Tom Brady, who again, last year has an off year, and this year he's on fire. So the best coaches can take any player, and they make them great. And other coaches struggle with that. So
now, would you say literally any player, or are there some?
No, the best coaches can do it.
They can do it.
The best coaches find a way to take a player and make them care more about the team and get them into the system. They just know it's, you know, it's almost like a salesman thing. They know, they see the close. Like, if I can get this over here, it'll work. Then you have people like, you know, I'm not a big fan of Rex Ryan and some of these coaches who are kind of, I think, too old school and too, I don't know. You see a Jay Gruden and
the Redskins. Rex Ryan, the Jets, right?
Jets.
They seem like they just bring in the most controversial people and then fail to do anything with them. Would that be accurate?
I feel like Rex Ryan wants to be in the spotlight too much. he likes attention. And you just saw it with Jay Gruden and the Redskins. RG3 talking poorly about the team. DeSean Jackson now talking poorly about the team. And Jay Gruden, you know, had to come in and, I guess, somewhat apologize for starting controversy. DeSean Jackson, a great example. Chip Kelly decided to cut him. And I can't say too much bad about Chip Kelly right now because he's got a good system. And again, if you got to know what you can and can't do. If you can't tame a player, you got to let him go.
Right.
So not everybody's can do everything. But DeSean Jackson is outrageously talented.
Yeah, no question. And he would,
without question, help the Eagles on the field if you could get him to play to his potential. I mean, he already leads the league in yards per reception, and he can't be caught. He's the fastest person in the world, it seems like. He just catches it. No professional athletes can't catch him. Not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not want to play tag with him.
So Seattle is somewhat, it's got to be depressing for them. You win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You have Russell Wilson, who's young 20s, right? Mm-hmm. You have all these things set up. Marshawn Lynch. How old is Marshawn Lynch, Tom?
28.
Okay, so he's not that old, and he throws grown men through the air. And yet, you took Percy Harvin, who, again, how old is he? He's not that old, 28 probably, something like that. And you lose him. You have to let go of him. And yeah, now you have Marshawn Lynch. Percy Harvin's 26. You know, it's like, what happened? And, you know, Pete Carroll, you can't say anything bad about Pete Carroll because he won a Super Bowl. But at the same time, he has to feel an incredible amount of responsibility for the fact that if he could have just kept that team together and kept them focused. So
then we get to that question then. It comes down to the coach, is what you're saying. A good coach doesn't have to make those judgments. They're going to pick the most talented, the best potential they have, and they're going to deal with the locker room thing because they're capable of doing that.
Take LeGarrette Blount. He just got cut from the Steelers, right? He was on the Patriots, got cut from the Steelers. What did the Patriots do? They picked him right up. They put him right in, right? First carry was a touchdown for the Patriots, right? I mean, just think about it that way.
Yeah.
It's like they stole it. They gave him away. They got him back for cheap now or whatever, or for easy. And now he runs for touchdowns for them because Belichick's locker room is so sound. It's so business. You know, they take all of the...
They take the drama out of it.
I don't know how they do it, but they do it. And again, not easy. I mean, we're talking about the best in the world can take anybody and fit them into their system. And I'm sure it doesn't work for Belichick all the time, but you never hear about it that I can remember. They're just gone, I guess, and they move on. So
if you know, though, that you maybe can't manage that, then you have to make those decisions a little bit differently.
Swiftly.
Yeah.
If you're like, hey, LeGarrette Blount's walked off the field and it's tearing up our locker room, he's got to be gone. Or it's either got to be fixed or gone.
And that's not – would you fault a coach who makes those decisions, or is it just knowing yourself a little bit as a coach?
I fault a coach that wouldn't make the decision. I mean, again, not everyone's Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Life isn't fair, you know. Life isn't fair. But what Belichick has achieved is possible if coaches – I think if coaches work towards that. I mean, Belichick will work you to death. You know what I mean? So whose phone is ringing?
Yours.
Mine. My phone is ringing. I have it on Do Not Disturb, but if you call me twice in a row, it
disturbs you. Yeah.
But it's just Lindy Sabloff.
Yeah, so,
Lindy. It's just an emergency.
We'll get back to it. It's probably the collapse of the company.
I love it. nothing big. So, you know, no, I don't fault them. It's very hard to do. But I wanted to bring up the point that a failing player, you know, who takes responsibility? The coach should always take responsibility for a failing player. But you're also asking who's the best player. And that is not always the quote-unquote best player.
Yeah, so that's a different question a little bit. When you're evaluating players, and this, I would say, let's shift our focus a little bit and talk about our league. When our coaches are evaluating players, the criteria by which they evaluate them, how much of their off-field capabilities, either as a teacher, you know, going out to clinics and working with kids, or as a salesman getting out and bringing people to games and encouraging people to pay attention to the sport, or as a talent, you know, that we can put on camera, and, you know, all those things. Like, how much of that off-field stuff should our coaches be taking into account as they start to build their teams, which is happening soon? I mean, New York's tryouts are December 6th.
Coaches shouldn't take any of that into account. Coaches should just worry about winning, but coaches don't sign players. So,
good point.
If I'm a coach, I don't care about any of that stuff. I just want to win, and that's what I want from my coach if I'm a GM. A GM, however, and we've talked about this a lot this year, it doesn't matter how good of an ultimate player you are at the moment, unfortunately. It's not the only thing that matters. In football and basketball, it's actually not true in those either.
Yeah.
We just don't know about the players that have been cut. There's a great documentary called, was it The GOAT? Greatest of All Time, about a basketball player who was, you know, supposed to be better than Jordan and all this other stuff. You know, it's all in hyperbole, but
of course.
But he couldn't get out of his own way with drugs and alcohol and mistakes and, you know, just making the bad choices at the wrong time. So we don't even hear about those players because they're never promoted. But in the NFL, all you have to do is be a great player and follow the rules. They set up all your press, they do all the stuff for you. And the more engaged you are, the better it is. I mean, the better it is for you. But for us, we don't have this, you know, how long has the NFL been around?
We don't have the machine.
Years. Yeah. We have a machine.
But it's not smaller. That machine.
Yeah. So
it's a smaller machine.
And we don't have full-time players. So right. What we need is dedication.
Mm-hmm.
You have to show up to a vast majority of the games. And that's something we've talked about with GMs this year, that you can have a great player, the phenomenal player. But if they can only show up to a few games, they're just, you can still have them involved. You can still do things with them. They can still come and practice with the team or do stuff. They can still be a part in their way, but they can't be on the roster because
right.
It's the wrong message that they're not going to help you win, and they're not going to help the league win. And this year we've been promoting something called we need to, and I stole this from, what's his name? It was first year with the Connecticut Constitution, John Korber said,
yeah.
There's two wins. You got to win the game and win the fans. So for us, we need to think about it that way. Your ability and your willingness to go out and do clinics counts. Your ability, your willingness to make events, your willingness to be active on social media, your willingness to ask your friends and coworkers to come to a game. Yeah, there's a story I've been telling teams, and I did this with the spinners. I said, because, you know, first year I coached them. So I said, who was the best player on the 2012 spinners? And everybody said Jake Rainwater. And I said, that's a good point, because he was dominant that year.
Yep.
But if you want to know who the best player for me was, it was Kevin Chang and David Brandolph, because David Brandolph sold 103 tickets and Kevin Chang sold 114, which was miles over what other people had done.
Yeah.
So if I had 25 Kevin Changs, a very good player, right, but he, you know, was towards the end of the roster, we would have had more people and more revenue, and that counts.
Yep.
So it's a fine line, and I think that most of our players embrace that and understand that wonderfully, and it's so great. They understand, like, hey, we got a lot to do here. We can't just come and play. We're too young of a thing, and we need to put more into it. And I love the attitude that they bring to it, because it's the right attitude, you know. And we're just trying to embrace that even more and say the best players in the world are the players who play for the MLU, because we promote you and do all the things that make you recognized as the best. And what makes you that is your willingness to win the game and win the fans. And that's awesome.
Yeah, and I really think that the player advisory committee is going to be a big part of working on this type of stuff and helping us to communicate better with players. And it's interesting as a coach, too. You said a coach just needs to win, but a coach also answers to a GM. So there's going to be some back and forth there. And that's probably a good thing. That push and pull between the GM's need to have a successfully running team, putting people in the stands, bringing in revenue, coaches' desire to win the games is going to create the dynamic where we find, in between those two things, the best players for our league.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll find out who the best players are this year. You know, but know that we're committed to that. We're fooled by it. Let me say this again. We're kind of fooled by who the best player is. People think that LeBron James doesn't put in the full circle of work. He's an entertainer in so much, in every way. He's so active socially. He lets his face, you know, be shown everywhere. He shows up at all the events. when he goes onto the court and he would do, like, you know, the powder thing, like, he knows how to engage the fans.
Yeah.
There are other players who I always think of Stephon Marbury, right? Phenomenal, phenomenal player. Do you know him?
No.
Starbury. Who was it? The Knicks, Tom? Played for the Knicks. You couldn't have had more talent, but he just didn't fit in, and he couldn't make it work, and he, you know, is out of the league. But I'm sure he holds records for something. He probably, you know, has done things that have earned him records, but he just, no one knows him, because even at that level, he didn't engage. But then you have someone like LeBron James who engages in it all, and we forget that, we think that he's famous just because of what he does on the court, but think about it. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
He's in all the commercials. He's in all the award shows. He's at all, every time there's a charity, every time there's an interview, you see his face.
Yeah, and don't be fooled. It's work.
It's work.
You're putting in work to go to all the events, to go shoot commercials and do all that stuff. It's you know, it's a job. And obviously, as we said, we don't have full-time players now, but we have players who are ready and willing to do a very good part-time job at this.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, and they already do. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the new ways people start engaging, the new ways that people get more involved with the fans, that our players get more involved with kids, get their face out more into the world.
And this year's all about upping the dedication from us to our players and us to our fans and players to us and players to fans. Everybody wants to be more dedicated, and we have new avenues for them to, even with Nike Ultimate Camps, right? New avenues for revenue, new avenues for rewards. It's exciting. It's an exciting season.
With all the sponsors we're signing, you know, these are sponsors that want people to associate with their brands, and they are very, very interested in the types of players that we have and the type, you know, the people that they are, the athletes that they are, all those things.
Yeah.
So new opportunities every week.
And we know Timmy Pearson will be doing a creamy Skippy commercial.
That is not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's not going to be chunky.
All right. So we have one more segment. I don't know how much time we've spent here because we've failed to time it, but we're going to get right into this.
Yeah.
Go through it kind of quickly.
Before Lindy calls again. Come
before
on.
Lindy calls a second time. So this is, we're refining the rules each year, and we have a new rule introduction. So anytime you introduce a rule, we say this all the time, you're introducing a rule to fix a problem or to address a potential issue. This rule, I would say, and I'll let you explain the rule in a second, but I say that the issue we're addressing is that at the end of a game, we want to provide more of an opportunity for a team to come back. And that's issue one. Two, we want to introduce a little more of a complex strategy element for coaches around the timeouts. And I think that it touches on those two issues.
I thought this was the rule where everybody had to shake the commissioner's hand and kiss his hand at the end of a game.
Not his hand, his ring. We're not talking about that rule yet. It's going to be pretty controversial.
Not this one.
Yeah.
Okay. It won't get shot down. So you know, this is a proposal.
Yes.
Gone out to the PAC. It's gone out to the rules committee. Ian's heading that up. So here's the idea. Also to go with what you said is that a timeout should be able to be used strategically at any point in the game. Therefore, during play, during stoppages, there should be benefits for using it there. Right now, if you call a timeout between points, the only reason you would do that is to gain an extra 90 seconds.
Yeah, if you're disorganized, essentially.
Right. So it's and I don't really like that. You know, I thought that we could improve that. So the idea here is that all the timeouts are incentivized to be used during gameplay. So if we make it so that if the defense, the pulling team, calls a timeout during between points, they would get to pull from some yards closer to the opponent. So instead of pulling from the goal line, maybe they pull from midfield. And because of that, they now have a shorter distance to run. They could put up a higher pull. They could do a different type of throw. They could throw a blade or a hammer or something and try to pin a team back in their end zone and get a Callahan, which would get them not only the point, but then they get to receive the disc. So you're down by two. Calling a timeout after you score, you know, is a strategy. And I like that a lot. To me, it reminds you of basketball. Basketball made it so when you call a timeout in the last 45 seconds, minute, two, something minutes, whatever it is, in the last minute of the game, you get to get the ball at half court.
Yeah, right? Calling a timeout, if you're under the basket, you get to move all the way up to half court. It's a very similar idea. This is, you know, this type of rule isn't at all like unheard of in sports.
Well, it's brilliant, if that's what you're trying to
let's
say.
Let's not go that far.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what I like about it is I like two things about it. I like the drama of the timeout now. So you're saving a timeout. One of your players gets stuck, trapped against the sideline and calls it. The fans are losing their mind because you've just lost your opportunity.
Yeah, you got to paint it. You got to paint it. There's a minute and 30 seconds left.
Yep.
Right? You're down by two, and you're 10 yards away from scoring, and you get screwed up and you call a timeout. It's almost, you can feel like game over, right? Like
yep.
If you, now that you call that timeout, you can't pull from half field. You can't try to do, you know, pin them. You can't try to put on this massive amount of pressure because the back of the end zone is another defender, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't, so, and then also if you call the timeout and you're down by one, 60 seconds left, you're pulling from midfield and you throw it out of bounds, you have just wasted everything about that opportunity. And yeah. I love that type of drama in games. I mean, it's what sports are filled with.
It creates a new skill set too, right? Much like the kicker has to practice that onside kick, and the ones who are really good at it are amazing. This is a special type of pull that your specialist is going to have to practice. Hmm. Somehow landing it in the back of the end zone, lofting it from half field, giving your defenders time to get down and pin them in. It creates a lot of new strategy and new dynamic in the game.
By the way, I saw the worst onside kick ever.
The worst?
Luke, who was a soccer player who kicked the ball with their right foot instead of their left foot for the goal and you guys were watching
Lamella.
It?
Lamella.
Eric Lamella?
Eric Lamella.
So the kicker runs up facing left but spins his right foot around to kick it in front of his left foot, so he kicks it right. Uh-huh. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
And the other team just caught it. I was like, what? You fooled everybody except the other team.
You fooled your own team.
Yeah, you kicked it just the other way, and the other guy caught it, and he kneeled. They should have
had a conversation about that beforehand.
It was so silly. And look, it was like, that's impressive what you just did, but it was the worst onside kick. You have to get the onside kick in the air, not the wrong direction. So anyway, I'm going to show you that clip. You should look up that clip. It was terrible, though impressive. But yeah, this is a cool rule. So we'll see if it – you'll see what everybody thinks, but we're pretty confident this is going to go through because there's really no downside to it at all. There's an upside. It allows for more strategy and more coaching. We like that.
Yeah, we want to see – everybody wants to see the comeback. Everybody wants to see the pressure mount at the end of the game. And so this rule creates a dynamic addition of pressure at the end of games, which is fun.
And I've been chatting about it with players, and no one said anything, but that's pretty cool. They're like, I like the idea.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to hear what everybody has to say. If you have any comments on it, you can get us at Nick Darling, at Jeff Snader, at Cleats Cufflinks. You can email us, cleatsandcufflinks@mlultimate.com. Send us your questions. Send us your comments, derision, compliments, whatever you like.
No, if you want to complain, you could do it. Was it at MLU Luke R?
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. Or at MLU Tom Levy for all your complaints.
At MLU Tom Levy, yeah. Just if you have any complaints, hit them right up. So they're in charge. All right.
Well, it was fun.
I'm tired of you. Time.
Yeah, that's about enough for today.
So we'll be back as soon as we can. We got Thanksgiving with turkey. This is where I eat too much and feel bad about myself, and then go back a couple hours later and do the same thing.
Yeah, do you do a lot of sad napping?
Actually, I do just pass out napping. I eat enough turkey so that I hit the couch face down and I'm just out. But the Eagles game is on. I got a bunch of family over. So, and you're going to, you're an idiot because you're going north.
Yeah, going up to Rochester, which will be cold and snowy.
Yeah, so we'll see you in March when you thaw out.
Yep, once I can chisel my way back. Yeah,
good choice.
Yep.
Have a great time with the family, okay?
You as well.
And we'll be back here and we'll talk about some more stuff in a couple weeks.
We'll do it. Jeffrey.
Nicholas.